Hello, everybody. Hello, Lizzie. Welcome. Welcome. This is Turning Towards Life with Lizzie and Justin from Third Space. And we are here again for our 448th week of conversation. It's really good to see you, Lizzie. And hello, everybody who's with us, whether you have just found your way to us. Maybe somebody recommended this or pointed you this way. Or maybe you've been with us for a long time. Whether you are with us often or occasionally, you're equally welcome. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. And we are about to begin with a wonderful, excellent, exciting source that you've brought us, Lizzie. And we'll do what we do every time, which is we'll put this piece of writing in between us and then let the conversation unfold in an unhurried way, which is what we've done all of these weeks. And it's a very rich practice to engage in together. And just before we begin, I want to say to everyone, all of you who are with us, you can find out more about Turning Towards Life by heading over to the turningtowards.life website, where you'll find all our conversations, ways of supporting this project, ways to get us into your inbox, ways to join us live, our Turning Towards Life live Season 3 is open for booking now, and it starts after the summer. You can contact us there. It's a wonderful resource. And it's the 10th of May, 2026, when we're recording this, and we are heading towards the start of our Third Space year-long professional coaching program. And you can find out about that at wearethirdspace.org. And I think I've done all of the preliminaries now, Lizzie, and I'm here and handing over to you.
So, thank you, Justin, for all the preliminaries. And one other preliminary is that if you want to be able to read this alongside us speaking it, you can find it in the show notes for whatever podcast platform you're on, or turningtowards.life. We always put the text there as well. And you'll get it into your inbox as well if you signed up for our weekly emails, which come out each time we publish a podcast episode. And it is a total joy to be here today, Justin. As you were doing the preliminaries, my mind was wandering to the complete indescribable something, which I'm going to have a go at describing, which is when something is alive, whether it's a relationship or a podcast or a job or something, it seems that that invites the possibility of it becoming more and more interesting and compelling as we go, rather than the narrative that I've had for many things in my life, which is the more I do it, the more boring it gets and the more monotonous it is. And I'm just in a moment of wonder at how alive this feels to me and how excited I am to bring this source, and how having Turning Towards Life every week and us choosing sources alternately between us has me encounter the world so differently, and to seek for the things that could be between us and could be appropriate for the kind of conversation we're intentionally having together, which is for deepening and all the things that Turning Towards Life stands for. And I not only get to read it and feel excited by it, but I know in my system, because this is an again and again and again thing, that I get to bring it somewhere to kind of process it in myself. So this source I've been sitting with for a full week, and I've been talking to everybody about it. Anyone who's had a coaching call with me or in anything with me, I've been reading snippets of it because it feels so alive and relevant to all the humans. And now I get to actually be in it with you and find my way into the feeling and the thinking and the why it's so interesting to me-ness. And it feels really alive, and my whole system feels awakened by the possibility of feeling more of what Parker Palmer's talking about in this incredible source. And this source is from his book, The Courage to Teach, which is an old, wonderful book. And it's been on my desk for, I think, probably 16 years now or something, maybe longer. And it never fails to have more and more gems in it. And of course, like with these brilliant books, I come back around again and I'm a different person reading it each time. So I receive something different from it. It's one of those kinds of books. It's not a one read wonder. It deepens my understanding each time, because I think I'm different each time I come back to it. And then it changes me in turn. So The Courage to Teach is an extraordinary book, and it's about teaching. But as it happens, it's about everything, really. And I think I was shown this book in the context of me becoming someone who leads our year-long coaching course, Justin. as a way to hold the kind of power that we hold there in healthy and bountiful, fruitful ways. And as it turns out, that's just not separate to being a mother or a friend or any place. And we're in this conversation about power at the moment in Turning Towards Life Live, Justin. And I think this book is an amazing commentary, reflection, teaching on how to hold our power with humans in the world. So I have this little excerpt that I found the other day. It's quite far at the front. It's on page 13 of the book. And as you said, Justin, we're going to read it and see where the conversation goes. But I just want you to know how grateful I am to have the space to find out what I think about it and what I feel about it by having the chance to express myself and put language to the thing that's just bubbling away in me. And I'm also going to allow this to be like not the thoughts I've already had, but whatever's here, you know, between you and I. And I know that whatever you say will change the way I think about it and feel about it. And whatever I say will change me and all that. So here we go. So by identity, I mean an evolving nexus where all the forces that constitute my life converge in the mystery of self. My genetic makeup, the nature of the man and woman who gave me life, the culture in which I was raised, people who have sustained me and people who have done me harm, the good and ill I have done to others and to myself, the experience of love and suffering, and much, much more. In the midst of that complex field, identity is a moving intersection of the inner and outer forces that make me who I am, converging in the irreducible mystery of being human. By integrity, I mean whatever wholeness I'm able to find within that nexus as its vectors form and reform the pattern of my life. Integrity requires that I discern what is integral to my selfhood, what fits and what does not, and that I choose life-giving ways of relating to the forces that converge within me. Do I welcome them or fear them, embrace them or reject them, move with them or against them? By choosing integrity, I become more whole, but wholeness does not mean perfection. It means becoming more real by acknowledging the whole of who I am. Identity and integrity are not granite from which fictional heroes are hewn. They are subtle dimensions of the complex, demanding and lifelong process of self-discovery. Identity lies in the intersection of the diverse forces that make up my life, and integrity lies in relating to those forces in ways that bring me wholeness and life rather than fragmentation and death.
Thank you, Lizzie. This really is marvelous. And I want to recommend to all of us who are listening, as I just was, if you can, if you're in a position to pause and get the text in front of you, it's really wonderful to see it whilst you're hearing it. There's so much in it. I noticed as you were reading, Lizzie, it's so different from the way that you and I will speak when we're just speaking to one another, the amount of care over each word. So it's, I've been following as you were reading. So this is from The Courage to Teach by Parker Palmer. I agree, one of the world's great books, from page 13. By identity, I mean an evolving nexus where all the forces that constitute my life converge in the mystery of self. My genetic makeup, the nature of the man and woman who gave me life, the culture in which I was raised, people who have sustained me and people who've done me harm, the good and ill I have done to others and to myself, the experience of love and suffering, and much, much more. And in the midst of that complex field, identity is a moving intersection of the inner and outer forces that make me who I am, converging in the irreducible mystery of being human. By integrity, I mean whatever wholeness I'm able to find with that nexus, as its vectors form and reform the pattern of my life. Integrity requires that I discern what is integral to my selfhood, what fits and what does not, and that I choose life-giving ways of relating to the forces that converge within me. Do I welcome them or fear them, embrace them or reject them, move with them or against them? By choosing integrity, I become more whole, but wholeness does not mean perfection. It means becoming more real by acknowledging the whole of who I am. Identity and integrity are not the granite from which fictional heroes are hewn. They are subtle dimensions of the complex, demanding, and lifelong process of self-discovery. Identity lies in the intersection of the diverse forces that make up my life, and integrity lies in relating to those forces in ways that bring me wholeness and life, rather than fragmentation and death.
Thank you, Justin. There is so much in here, my goodness. All the threads dangling around that I could pull on. There were two bits as you were reading that really came and found me. And I also have some context bigger than this passage of the whole book as well. And one of the things that Parker Palmer writes so beautifully around is circles of congruence, I think he calls it, where many of us are in the world with an inner experience that doesn't really get met by our outer experience. And what he advocates for is for us finding social places where we can be in relationship with others, where our inner worlds are welcome, where we can experience ourselves as congruent with the outside, not only congruence in our, inside of ourselves as feeling and thinking and reflecting in particular ways about the world, about life, family, parenting, work, all of those things. So what he's saying broadly in my interpretation is that sometimes we feel very alone in the world because we have all these inner experiences where we think something's not right or we're questioning things and it seems everyone around us is playing the game. And he talks about going into universities and talking about the courage to teach and in teaching programs. And he said the longer he hangs around, the more people end up coming up to him and saying, I think the same thing. But it's kind of, it takes a while before people step forward. And often there are, say, five people in a room of 100, and those five people don't know that each other thinks the same thing about the system or that there's some unease here or something. But the more he stays present and hangs around, the more they come out in the woodwork. And then he ends up connecting them because he can see that there are people who would be congruent with one another. And in reading that part, it had me realize how valuable in my life it has been to be in circles of congruence where my inner world, and then that circle being the outer forces of life, other people, people who aren't me, and us having some common ground to stand on about life itself and what's happening and capacity to reflect with one another and talk in ways where we listen to one another, for example, just like Turning Towards Life Live is. There's a way that we can be met in our inner world that has such value to us then bringing our gifts forth. And in order for me to bring my gifts forth, it doesn't feel like a lone game. It feels like to be with people and to be seen and to be received in community and strengthens me and has me realize that I'm not completely kind of out on a limb or something. Actually, there's other people who feel and think deeply about things and want to be in that kind of conversation. And so this passage about integrity and identity feels so validating to me as a way of speaking about how important it is for human beings to feel met, to feel like we're not alone in our inner confusion about what on earth's happening in a system or in a world or in a family, but that we get into relationship and into community where we get to fully express ourselves and be welcomed in that particular way. And that's not separate from this line that says, integrity requires that I discern what is integral to my selfhood, what fits and what does not, and that I choose life-giving ways of relating to the forces that converge within me. So that when I experience what is converging within me and where I feel led and where I feel called, that I'm then in relationship about that as a way of tending to that impetus inside me. So I'm moving with it. I'm relating to it in life-giving ways by expressing myself. Like self-expression about what what's calling to me, what's mine in my, maybe what's within my gift, having self-expression and having community and having relationship that welcomes that feels like such a key piece of being human, and which is the biggest antidote to loneliness and aloneness in one's own inner world and one's own perception of things. And yesterday I was at a fair, Justin, and we were manning our little stall for our school. And I could tell in the sea of mothers, there were some mothers who just made a beeline for the calm, quiet space where they could feel that there might be some alignment, some congruence with their inner world of what it's like to mother in a world where you're going, whoa, what's going on here? This is all too fast. This is all too harsh. And then there's a little sanctuary of gentleness, and somebody could find their coherence with a field that really called to them. And I think that's what this is about, is finding places and ways in the world that meet us and letting ourselves be guided there and believing ourselves that those things are important to us and that we would like to be joined and met and held within something that feels congruent to our inner worlds.
It's wonderful hearing you talk about all of this, Lizzie, and feeling there's clearly so much to say about this source in your life that's going to be beyond this one conversation. Well, what hearing you is, one of the things that hearing you is sparking in me is the question of what is it to be for one another, the kind of ones who invite the inquiry and the discernment that Parker is writing about. So if I understand Parker, the way I'm understanding what Parker is writing here is that we are, that identity is something like these giant forces that we didn't make. You know, I didn't choose who my parents were. I didn't choose what my culture is. I didn't choose who sustained me and who harmed me. I may not have chosen, I'll have chosen some of the good and ill I did to others and to myself, and some of it I won't have known why I was doing it. Like, it's a huge, forceful something inside us. And I think what he's asking us to do is to pay attention to that, is to not cover that over, but is to really come in close to what that is, sort of to keep on asking the question, what am I and who am I and what's moving within me? That's sort of part one. And then part two, what he calls integrity, is to do with what we nurture and what we grow and what we attend to and what we smother and what we, and we've talked about this so many times in Turning Towards Life, like what is it to not turn away from that, but to be in relation to everything that we find in an intelligent and wise and compassionate way. And it's been occurring to me ever more strongly as you've been talking that some of that we can only do for ourselves. Certainly that's been my experience. Some of it I have to do by going for a long walk or sitting with a journal and writing, or but in the end I cannot do it all by myself. And how rare it is to have people who will accompany us in that process of discovery, who, you know, when I say to you, here's what I'm wondering about, or here's what I'm feeling, or here's what I'm struggling with, that you don't try to shut me down because you won't be with the thing that I'm wondering about or struggling with or working with, or because you want to correct me, or because you think I should be different to how I am. There is such a necessary and sacred gift in being ones who can offer the kind of welcome and relationship that has integrity to stay in this conversation, some of which might be very difficult, some of which is I'm really up against the edge of something in me that I don't have any idea how to make sense of yet. And can we be together with the kind of patience that it takes? Mm-hmm. If I'm going to be that one for you as you encounter these questions that Parker is, I mean, just asking, just like you're, I think that's what I was taking from what you were saying about this space for at the fair to find, you know, to find that kind of resonance and connection. We have to be loving and courageous and wise and unhurried and attached only to being of assistance to someone else. Where is it that Parker says this? Someone else discerning that which brings wholeness and life rather than fragmentation and death. So this is not a neutral pose to take mm-hmm. with one another. But I cannot take that position with you if I'm attached to you being the way I want you to be, or if I'm in a hurry for you to be a particular way. And I think that's what coaching is, the way that we understand it and the way that we practice it. And of course, it's not the only place that that can happen. There are many, I know of many places in my life where this happens. But I notice when I'm coaching, that often the first thing that somebody will say is, when I'm being a coach with other people, maybe that's a better way of saying it, is how rare it is to be welcomed in this way. To be welcomed for our complexity, for our gifts and our uncertainties, for our struggles, and also to be welcomed as unfolding processes, unfolding, changing beings, is so unusual in a world, like you said, that will often ask us to be certain, go very quickly, be productive rather than inquiring. There's a whole set of conditions that many of us encounter again and again, which works against this.
Mm.
So I suppose where I'm coming to is understanding what you're saying and also what I'm saying and what Parker's saying as a call to really attend to how we are with one another, so that more of us get a chance to attend to our integrity and identity in the way that Parker asks for.
You know, Justin, I've been thinking a lot, actually, just reflecting now. A few weeks ago, you brought this question that you often ask. You said that you often ask, which is, what is it like for you to be in this now? And I think we were talking about grief at the time, and when someone's died or there's something that's happened that's difficult and most of us don't know what to do or say. And that's the question that is the most attending to, which is different than you saying something about yourself or how you're feeling. It's actually asking what it's like for the person to be in the midst of the experience that they're in, and having that be a place to start. And it's showing me, in a way, firstly, how little that's asked. I don't hear anyone asking people that. It just isn't how the world is currently working. And secondly, that question in the context of this as well, is what is it to be a person who actually focuses, like, I found it always so challenging to be focused on myself so much. As in, it never feels right that I'm only looking after myself, I'm only thinking about myself. And as soon as I ask your question, Justin, what's it like for you now? It feels so much more human than me trying to find something to say that's the right thing to say. It feels like it liberates the conversation. It makes connection. It creates understanding. There's a way that we are not kind of polar opposite in awkwardness anymore. We can be together here. And that kind of curiosity about one another, I think, is such a central thing that doesn't seem to be very present in the world. And so often I have it too, Justin, where I was just thinking, I went out the other night with my niece and her, three of her acting friends. She's in acting school. And of course, I was just super curious about them. I was also quite like desperate to meet them, because any contact with her life, I'm like, yes, I'm included. And I'm really excited. I'm really interested to know who these people are. And of course, we do this and what we do, Justin. So it's we're cultivating, I think, our curiosity about other people all the time. And I had all these questions, and this boy, he's 19, turned around. He said, Lizzie, your questions are really interesting. Like, where are all these questions coming from? And I was just saying, like, what's it like to be acting school? What's happening in your being? You're halfway through the year. Like, how is this evolving for you in terms of your skills and your experience of being a person? And he said, where's all that coming from? And I just said, well, I think I'm really interested in you. And that's where my questions are coming from, not some script or something, but I'm really interested. And I think it's in those moments I realize how unusual it is in the world for us to be really curious about one another and to see, maybe then this is why this source is so interesting to me, is maybe that's what I'm really interested in, is how are we choosing life-giving ways of relating to the forces that converge within me? And what are the forces that are converging within you? And how do we even answer that question and be in the kind of relationship where we can just say some stuff and find out through talking what's converging in me? Because that's a massive question. If you say to me, Lizzie, what are the life forces converging in you and how are you responding to them? I'd be like, oh my God, I need like 12 years of conversation with you. We're going to have to go walking and camping and inquiring and reading and staring into space for a while. You know, it's huge to ask these questions. So it's, and the way that Parker brings this whole line about, where does he say it? The lifelong process of self-discovery, which is complex and demanding. Yes, it is. And I think that's why this passage is so compelling to me, because it's like this could live for my whole lifetime and beyond as something that's interesting and curious and compelling to consider and wonder, and to have community where we can be in this question forever about being a person, and we can bring that into the world in whatever small ways and small interactions we have. That to me feels like, well, in itself is a force converging in me, that I want to do that, that I feel drawn to be doing that. And I think it's something that matters to most people, to wonder what on earth this experience is really about and what I'm called towards and how to validate and understand the things that don't sit well with me or that I feel uneasy about, whether it's in education or the workplace or in a family or wherever we are in society, that we can bring our experiences to one another and feel like someone's welcoming it with curiosity and wondering and allowing us to express ourselves in safe and creative ways that mean we're welcome here by ourselves and other people.
I was thinking many things whilst you were talking, Lizzie, but one of the things I was thinking was, one of the reasons this is incredibly important, and there are many, is that I think that our wider culture as a whole calls us away from this question. The wider culture focuses on things like outer behavior, which is important, but at the expense of inner discernment, productivity over reflection, pace over patience, and individualism over relationship. And I think that that costs us enormously, it's not that all of those things don't have their places, but I think they've been flipped so that they're the wrong way around, so that the one that gets priority and the one that it becomes second, that they're exactly the inverse of what's actually called for. Mm-hmm. In order to find out what I'm committed to, in order to choose how to behave with you or how to, what to be up to requires this first, but the culture pushes us the other way as if that was somehow a luxury or irrelevant or an interruption to, all of those other projects of the culture. And so this is countercultural in a very important way, and that's really necessary. And one of the things that I, as I'm listening to you and I've got Parker's words in front of me that I'm really appreciating, is that Parker is asking us to attend to our own lives. So there is a sort of personal responsibility part or a personal possibility part in it. But he's asking us to do that in the context of having good and big questions about, where do I belong in relationship to the culture that I grew up in? Where do I belong in relationship to what's moving in me? It's a real, what it's asking of us is depth. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what we humans are first. I think that we're depth first, and then everything else, all of the practicalities that we must attend to arise from the depths that we are. And so many of us are starved of the possibility of any kind of contact with that. And so what you're saying about, what Parker is saying about the questions that we're called to ask, and what you're saying about how necessary it is to do that with one another, I think both of these are incredibly important because we can't do it on our own with the requisite depth, but also being in that conversation with one another deepens all of us. So by being the one who asks you, who's interested enough, it's not even interested enough. It's not like, oh, I'm really in. I mean, there is that. But if I'm willing to be someone who, regardless of whether I agree with what you're saying, I care enough about your presence to go, Lizzie, talk to me about the big questions that you are working with in your life. Talk to me about the forces that bring you wholeness and life rather than the fragmentation and death, the questions that are big enough that you're asking. That is, I think, is part of the, what's the word? It's necessary to live well, to do this with one another. For both the person who's making the space to listen and to ask those questions, and for the person who's speaking. So I'm thinking about you speaking to the drama students that you were with, because there's one question, it's a perfectly legitimate question. What are you going to do next? What are you going to do with this qualification? It's not a legitimate question, but it's by far from the only question, and it's not, I think, the primary question.
Yeah.
The primary question, what is this becoming in you and who are you becoming by your engagement with it? That is the question that makes humans different from computers and tables, and that we live in this intersection of meaning, forces and culture that Parker is talking to, and that we are called to live our way into it. That's what being a human is first. So I'm so glad for your way of articulating this, because I think it might be it could be a reminder to all of us that when we're with our friends and our children and our partners and our loved ones and our colleagues and the person who crosses the street with us and the person behind the, you know, person doing the checkout of the supermarket whilst there are still people doing that, and, you know, that to hold this orientation of wonder at the rich flowering of the world of another person, and then when we can, when it's appropriate, to be in, to be attentiveness towards it, is a gift to everyone that we could take, but many of us don't get, never got told this. So we are talking about it.
Yeah, Justin, it's reminding me just quickly, I know we're nearly at our time, but I was at a kind of cafe within a big park the other day, and there was like a little booth because it was busy, and they opened this little booth. It's just like you can get a drink or a cookie or whatever from this place. And this lady was serving us, and she was really fierce and was also really kind, and was calling everybody affectionate names and getting things done really efficiently and whatever. And I just stopped and I said to her, do you know what? I can really feel how fierce you are and also how kind. And it's quite the combination that I don't see very often. And I really appreciate that. And thank you. And she said, you know what? Thank you for saying that. The truth is I'm really, really angry and I'm really resentful today. And so I'm grateful that you're seeing how hard I'm trying to be polite when actually I'm really seething inside. I said, my goodness, thank you for telling me. I really understand that. It's really busy here. And, you know, we had this conversation and I was just at the front of the queue paying for a drink or whatever. And I went back a few weeks later and she was there again. And I said, oh, do you remember me? We had that conversation about kindness and fierceness at the same time. And she said, oh my God, of course I do. How great that we can have that kind of conversation. We had this really sweet little connection and we don't even know each other's names or whatever. But it's those moments where we get kind of to see people and see others. And I'm saying it because it's not like it was for her, because I got deepened by the experience of saying that to her. I was like, oh yeah, this is a way that it's really important to be here. And I feel more connected with the place and the experience because I've actually connected with someone, which is not about her receiving my way of seeing her, although that probably has value too to her, just to be seen as she's going about her daily business. But for me, it's connecting, it's real, and that really matters to me. So this whole thing about being changed by being either the sayer or the person being seen, the seer or the seen, it's just true that it's both, it's in both directions. And I'm so grateful to be in this wondering in this conversation, because it really does feel like the realest thing that we could be talking about. And as you said at the beginning, I feel like I could talk about this for about 20 years and it wouldn't dry up. So I'm hoping that this lives in other ways, maybe in other things that we do, Justin, that this holds some teaching space or something, because it's just such a wonderful piece of text. And also Parker Palmer, I've said it a million times, he's like the best thing. I love watching him, listening to him, reading him. He's making a massive contribution to the world and it's extraordinary. So thank you, Parker. If maybe in some world you get to listen to us, we're so grateful and we love you. And Justin, thank you for being a person who can grapple with these things and know what they mean and have reflections and be in it and say yes to all the sources that get brought. It's a real wonder. And thank you everybody for being here and being alongside us. It means so much. And we're so grateful for all of you. And we'll see you next time with another source that Justin's going to choose.